back out the garden and dig me up some worms and go fishing. I got me a nice little spot picked up.
Well, here we are back with a little radio fishing, and I got Jeff in the chair across from me today, and we're going to try and get things a little more lively. And if, in our case, we're not going to be able to go fishing today.
No, we're not going to be able to go fishing today.
But, you know, let's tell Elvin Bishop to quiet. There we go. Be quiet, Elvin. All right. Anyway, we're back, radio fishing, February 22nd, 2014. There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's what an amazing time to go fishing.
It is an amazing time to go fishing. The weather's starting to warm up again. Of course, we're probably the better part of the whole country right now. So,
yeah, I don't think there's, I mean, the Southwest is warm, but it's dry, and it's, you know, just, I mean, there's no place to go fishing. They got no water.
Yeah, no doubt. Mean,
so I think South Florida, number one.
Number one, no
we
doubt.
We win.
It's good.
It's very good. And now they're getting another cold blast up front.
One
up
more north. Front to go through up there, for sure. I think we might be done. I don't know.
We
might get one more freeze before March is over, but...
Well, they got one coming in next week or something like that that's really going to drop the temperatures. Got a notice from Andrew that he was heading out to buy Carhartts and stuff.
Ooh, nice. Because he's Mississippi or Tennessee.
Yeah, he's up in Memphis, and it's nice now. It's 50-some degrees, but... It's going to be 26 in the next few days.
Nice.
So, anyway, if you're sitting there and you're in Minnesota, Wisconsin, New York, wherever, and you're wondering, it's gorgeous here.
It is gorgeous. Yes.
A little foggy this morning.
A little bit of fog, but that's good. I usually like those mornings.
Yeah, it's
especially
nice,
especially when I'm going out in the boat.
And you love going upriver.
Yeah, and it's a great time to go.
Yeah, because on the river, you know, you can kind of putt along in the fog and still see the banks, and you can kind of make your way anywhere you want to go on the river.
You can pretty much do it, yeah.
When I love fishing the Peace River. Now, I've got one secret little hidey hole.
Right,
there,
we all have that one.
And I got to make my way up there this week because it's getting close to snook season.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, I got to say, you know, I mean, there's a lot of reports of good snook out in the harbor and out in Placida and everywhere like that. But, you know, for me, trolling up the river, which is something I've done for years. You know, we used to be able to go out and troll, and we'd probably catch 10 or 15 snook a day. Whether they were all keepers or not, very doubtful, but we would catch 10 or 15 fish a trip. But, you know, in the last few years, things have slowed down a little bit up there, and hasn't been as much fish snook-wise up there. I haven't been catching as many as I usually have in the past.
Well, it was actually the... After we had freeze and all that, there is a certain sequence that has to go on in order for the snook to really make a comeback.
Yeah. I think we got a juvenile population that is building again, and then it's going to take them a while to work their way back up river again.
Well, if the snook in the river didn't really die, and the snook out along in the canals and stuff, there wasn't a lot of dead snook in the canals either. Mm-hmm. But one of the problems we have is when those snook get together to breed, if we have a very dry year, they will spawn right at the end of a canal or on the river or someplace. And then we get a rain.
All their eggs sink.
The eggs go bad. Yeah. And snook can live in fresh water with no problem. Not and they can breed and spawn. Yeah. The problem is most of the eggs don't make it.
Now, a lot of the eggs, what the eggs do is they float. And if they're not in salty enough water, the eggs sink to the bottom. Yeah. And they never get...
they never mature.
Yeah, they never get
fertilized and everything. There's no way for them to all get together.
Yeah, that's why you'll see like the big female working her way down the shoreline, and then behind her about a couple hundred feet, maybe it'll be a group of smaller males.
Yeah.
And they believe that they like let out a pheromone, and that's why the males are following them down the shoreline. But they're supposed to be going out to the pass to mate. And
if
and
they spawn. Go out around Boca Grande, Gasparilla, Sanibel,
really
all the
good
barrier
chance.
Islands, 90-some percent of the eggs will live.
Yeah, really good chance.
But
of it.
If they do it up on the river, because it's been a drought year. Now, this year, it shouldn't be any problem. They should all leave. We've had enough rain.
Yeah.
There's still enough water coming down where they know they have to go to saltier areas.
Yeah.
And March and April is when they start getting those urges. They're getting full of roe.
Right.
And May is the peak time for
May and June will be the time when they're, you'll see them along the seawalls and working their way down.
Yeah, they're all heading out to the pass, and they're going to be heading out there. As long as we can keep these rains going, we'll get an extraordinary snook spawn this year.
It'd be good.
And that's going to bring us back in.
Yeah, I'd like to see a lot more of those fish upriver. You know, I've caught more redfish upriver this year and last year than I have that I can remember.
And even big redfish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
what's up with the big redfish? When they're hitting 33, 34 inches, they should be in the Gulf of Mexico, not up in the Peace River.
I know. I just think it might be because of, you know, there's never one thing. It's always a bunch of things. So.
I think it's just an abundance of food for them.
Crabs.
I think that's going to be one of the main things. And why is it every time I set this computer to do something, it's supposed to not do that for half an hour? And then all of a sudden now, come back in this morning and it's crashed and it's recovered.
Fix it all up again.
Now it's back to every 5 minutes, it goes black. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right.
So anyway, we've got a lot of snook in the canals, and I'm just not sure why more don't go up the Peace River. But
well, we know that, like when I was a kid, we'd go fish the outfall pipes during rains, and the snook would go to them like a fish at, I don't know, like white on rice, so to speak.
Yeah, because they're going to a feeder.
They're going to a feeder, you know, and the dam's the same thing.
Because they'll eat bugs, they'll eat crickets, they'll eat frogs, they'll eat fish. Yeah. Whatever comes down those pipes is fair game.
And most of the snook upriver, from people that I know that catch them and are eating them and stuff like that, they're saying that when they clean them out, everyone they find has got crawdads in it.
Yeah, so they're going up far enough to get crawdads.
Well,
I mean, you go up the Peace River, what, to Wachula and
Well, we go
parts
all the
beyond.
Way. In my boat that I would fish in the bay, in the harbor, my 18-foot boat, I can regularly go up to Iron Lake, which is a finger lake off the Peace River, just north of the Horse Creek cutoff.
And that can be great or bad. I remember going in there one day and going up in there, and we're seeing so many of these Placostomus armored catfish.
The snook eat them.
We literally started, we were just putting landing nets outside of the boat.
Scooping them
and
up.
And idling along, catching these catfish with the landing nets. Yeah. And it was crazy.
Invasive species, you know, come out of an aquarium, supposedly a wood eater. But a lot of people think they eat the eggs of fish, too, which I wouldn't know.
I think they would. Amazing though that eats fish eggs.
Yeah, amazing though the FWC, when they do their electroshocks upriver and they do their stock assessments and that, most of the time when they're opening them fish, they flush them, you know, with the hose and that to see what they've got in their bellies, and a lot of Placostomus
I think they're tarpon, snook, all those. You can't put that many fish in front of them.
Yeah,
I mean the population was so outrageous, millions, millions, millions of them. And they're swimming in front of the snook's face. Eventually, they're going to swallow one. And then they're going to go, okay, I can do this.
Yep.
And then it becomes part of the food.
Yep.
But once they get up to a certain size, it's a little tough. But it's amazing how many fish eat them now.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, of course, you know, if it's the only food source in abundance, then they're going to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
And now, I was talking to a guy up in Illinois where they have those carp and the jumping carp and stuff.
Yeah, right, right.
And they're trying to knock them back, but this guy's actually making a living off of them,
right?
Because he takes people out bow hunting for them.
Apparently, they're not bad to eat either.
You know, and I told him, I said, if you want to get rid of those carp,
right,
come up with a great recipe,
right,
send a sample to any restaurant in Atlanta, New York, Chicago, send it to a, you know, and I said, once there's a big recipe for it, only thing you'll have to try and do is protect them, because once people start eating them, they're done.
They're done. No, everybody will want them.
If
same thing that happened to the snook, you know, nobody ate them back in the 30s, and then boom, somebody showed them how to fillet them without the skin, and
redfish,
everybody wanted them.
Everything. I mean, redfish, literally, when I first started working here, no one fished for them.
Right.
They were considered a carp. They weren't any good. Nobody bothered with them.
Right.
And unedible fish.
Right.
Nasty. And now they're like the premier game fish.
Yep, exactly.
And because when you look on goingfishingfranks.com, go to the photo history.
All snook.
It's snook, cobia, trout, all
one
that.
One redfish.
Yeah, there's like, I think out of the 1,000 pictures I put up so far, still 1,500 more to go.
Right,
but,
right.
I really think there's only two redfish. I don't think there's more than that.
Yeah, probably wouldn't be too much more than that.
Yeah. It's amazing how times and tastes change.
Yeah.
So,
but if you get a chance to, I mean, go take a ride up the river. It's really pretty.
Now, right now in front of Harbor Heights, there's a whole bunch of ladyfish.
Is there? Yeah.
There's a bunch of ladyfish, and if you go just north, that's where all the tarpon are.
Oh, cool.
Up by the power lines.
Right by the power lines.
Oh, yeah. They're in those power line holes big.
You know that one spot up there by the first set of power lines? Mm-hmm. It's got a manatee sign in front of it and a red marker. You know, used to have grass on the front of it. Doesn't have grass in front of it anymore. But a lot of times I'll sit up there and I'll anchor in between the manatee sign and the island itself. And I'll sit in about 4 foot of water. And if I cast at the shoreline, of course, I'm casting my floating rig at the shoreline with the mangroves and letting it drift by with the current. But if I cast behind me out into the river, a lot of times I pick up tarpon that way. Because it drops off from 4 to 12 feet right off that edge. And really good fish will pop up. And you never know what you're going to get there. You know?
Yeah, and just get your boat up in the shallows and cast right from the shallows into the deep.
Yep.
And yeah, it's always scary because this thing, when it blanked out.
When it blanked out, you don't know where the
yesterday
it was going.
It went, no operating system. It's all done. We're back. Right. Oh,
we're still
God.
Going.
Sorry, folks, but I've had so many computer problems and so many malfunctions. And yesterday, everything died again. And we're back on due to Captain Kale with a brand new computer. And everything got loaded. I was like shocked. We did it in one day. It's been taking us 3 days to get this thing recovered. And we were actually able to do it in one afternoon.
That's great.
But back up to the snook fishing.
Yeah.
You're up there, you're between the manatee sign and the red marker. That's just barely north of Arbor Heights.
Yeah, you're still seeing mangroves there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you still see the mangrove bushes there. You know, once you start to lose the mangrove bushes and you don't see them anymore, you know, then you start to go into a different climatic, you know, area, actually. We have a couple different zones in our river.
That's what I love about the Peace River. You start out, you're in a saltwater environment, you get all the mangroves, and it's like being on the flats. And then as you go up, the sawgrass starts, and then it leaves sawgrass and goes to cypress trees.
Yep.
And you literally can watch the environment change while you drive up river. If you watch the vegetation... And you can understand, once you get up a little ways further, why they did Tarzan movies there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Because it definitely looks like it.
Oh, yeah. It looks like you're in the heart of Africa, you know.
Right.
And it's amazing to what you can... Just the drive alone is cool.
Yeah,
just to run up there. Yeah. And if you do like Jeff does and go trolling, what's a couple of your favorite trolling rigs?
Bomber, black, gold, and orange bomber. One of my favorite ones. The storm bait has been working well in the purple color. It's got the purple back on it.
I like that purple back. The white's number one seller, 10 to 1 over everything else. But
the purple does work upriver.
Oh, man, I love that
purple. I've got a few guys that come in and they buy nothing but that new Rapala balsa wood purple lure.
Oh, that
purple
scatter
descent.
Wrap.
Yeah, well, the purple descent. It's like a big X-wrap, really.
Yeah.
But the scatter wrap, I haven't tried that one yet.
Oh, the scatter wrap's unreal. Got a slow troll around 2 miles an hour, maybe a little bit more. But it swims in the middle and goes to the left and swims and comes back to the middle and then maybe go to the left, maybe go to the right. It's got a very unique lip on it, but it doesn't track in one line. It goes to the side and swims and goes back.
I could see where that
swims.
Would be good and bad for me. If I've got multiple lines out, they might all get together.
It doesn't go very far.
Oh, okay.
It's not like it's diving out 6 or 8 feet. It's
just
you know, a foot or two, and you know,
erratic.
Yeah, it's got about a 2 foot area that it swims in.
Oh, I can deal with that.
And so it's still good for trolling, but it's very erratic.
That's probably what makes it good.
Yeah, I mean, it starts here, and then it's over there, and then it comes back, and then it moves, and you don't really know which way it's going to go. And I think that's kind of that darting, you know, erratic bait fish.
That's what
thing.
Brings them in, yeah.
Yeah, because
you know, a lot of times
whacking the bass on them.
We'd work a lure and we'd be bringing it back, and about the time you were going to maybe pull it out of the water, you'd change the rod direction, and a lot of times we'd get a snook at that point. You know, as soon as that lure did something different than it was doing, you know?
Right? Like it was going to escape.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
I'm following it. It's all good. I got my lunch in front of me. Oh, there it goes.
Boom.
So, what's your trolling speeds? 2, 3, 5
You know, it's funny. I go between 3 and 6 knots. It depends whether I'm going with the current or against the current. If I'm going with it, I'm going to be more towards the 6 side. If I'm going against it, I'm going to be at the 3 side of it. But I seem to get more strikes on the against the current, where I'm trolling my baits into the current. Seems like the fish are facing the bait more or less.
I would say I think you're right on the money. One of the problems is people, when I'm going with the current, the fish aren't. It's not natural for a
doesn't
fish
seem
to go
like
with
it.
The current.
Doesn't seem like it. Yeah,
going against the current. Well, fish look into the current.
Yeah.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. You're coming behind the fish, and I don't think they're really that aware of it.
Bringing it up from behind them, I think, creates more of a predatory reaction where they're moving away from something that might be trying to get them.
Yeah,
it's the other way, they look at it and see it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And they can smell it coming.
And they can smell it.
You can put a little bit of juice on it and a little Procure.
Anything.
I got to get more of that Strike King stuff.
Yeah, you like it?
I'm out of it.
Ah, cool.
And we've got to order more, but I like that coffee smell.
Yeah.
Because to tell you the truth, I mean, I like coffee with a little cream and sugar, warm white sweet.
Yeah,
right. And here, I have a you can put it on your lure. And instead of my boat smelling like Menhaden or whatever,
it smells like coffee.
It smells like coffee.
Right.
It's wonderful.
I don't know how they came about that, but you can only imagine, you know,
I talked to the guy.
Oh, yeah?
And he had a fish feeder by his house, and he uses an old percolator coffee maker.
Oh, okay.
He's had it for years, you know, on the stove, and it percolates up, but there's always grounds in the coffee.
I gotcha.
And in the morning, he goes out, and he watches his fish feeder go off. And he takes a drink of the coffee, and at the bottom he's got the grounds. Well, he just throws that in the water.
And the fish were coming up to it.
They were going after that before the fish food after a while.
Caffeine addicts.
And, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you've got all these fish chasing around. What's up, Carl? You got a fishing pole in your hand. Do you have a question on your mind?
Looks like one of our poles.
Yeah, it looks like a Fish and Frank pole.
It does.
Here, sit down, Carl. You can. We have another microphone here. Yeah, the chair's in the back. Sorry. All right, but yeah, that actually is how it came about.
That's pretty interesting.
At the fish feeder, him throwing his coffee grounds in the morning, and the fish were going after that before they would even go after the fish food.
That's crazy.
So here I am talking to this guy, and I said, well, you know, I get it because I... Oh, you got it, Carl? Okay. There we go. We'll get you a little volume. Are you with us?
Yep.
All right. We've been talking about trolling up river, and I like the Strike King. I'm out of it right now, so don't come in asking for it. It'll be a week or so before we get any more. But if your boat can smell like coffee with cream and sugar
instead of bait,
yeah, I mean,
I'm all for that.
Yeah, it's great, and it works. I mean, I've gone through 2-3 cans of it throwing lures, and I like it. The problem you have to do is you have to black tape the bottom of it, or dip it in something, or paint it,
right?
Because it's a metal can.
The bottom of the boat.
Rust marks.
Yeah,
and I still have one rust mark from the damn first can I put on there because I didn't know. After that, I just took black tape on the second one, wrapped the bottom of it.
That's
black tape.
That's probably the quickest thing to do. Yeah,
you know, but you can Rust-Oleum the bottom of it, paint it, whatever.
Right.
But
I don't know. I like the tape. It doesn't seem like it would scratch. Or, yeah. You know what I mean?
No, the tape was tape actually worked really well. So what you up to, Carl?
Not a whole lot. Just getting ready for tomorrow.
So why are you holding the Fish and Frank's rod?
Because I have a 5-year-old tomorrow. So I need a little rod.
Yes.
Nice.
You need something so they can actually land their fish.
Yeah.
The best part, we developed these rods, and it's called the Early Angler Series. Now, Greg is using these regularly on his lures and stuff because it's so short when you're fishing the mangroves.
You got a lot of...
Oh, yeah. You can flip it upside down and cast. You can skip. You can do all this stuff, and it's way heavy enough to hold the fish.
Yeah. Well, 10 to 20-pound braid, right?
Yeah. The cool part about it is it gives the kid the leverage advantage, and I spent a lot of time with the blanks.
Yeah.
Because when, you know, there's three of us here, and we all basically use 7-foot rods.
That's all I use.
Average. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some 7.5, 6.5, 8s, but on a 7-foot rod, that gives us a certain amount of leverage and power.
Right.
But you giving that to a kid who's not develop muscle, doesn't have any muscle development.
He's half
yet.
The height you are.
Yeah, and I mean, he's 3 foot tall. Yeah. You give him that 7-foot rod, and he can't land a fish
with
it. It'd
be like giving us a 9-foot rod.
Yeah.
Here you go.
You know, and you're supposed to hold it in one hand and bring in a big fish,
sure.
And the leverage is screwed up. Yeah. With this blank, it's got just enough tip to curl over to create a shorter distance between the handle and the tip to give it a little more power, a little more leverage, but it literally has 30-40% more power than what a standard rod, an adult rod, would have.
Sure.
And it's been crazy.
It's pretty strong, too.
Oh, yeah, they just...
I'll tell you, anybody that's
gotten
one...
If the line will hold it,
the
rod will hold it.
Yeah, if anybody that's gotten one, or we've given one to somebody and said, try it, if you don't like it, bring it back, most of those people come back in and here's the cash. I like the rod.
Yep.
I haven't had anybody come in and say, no, I want something else.
We've sold 90-some of the Fishy series, the women's pink rod.
Right.
I've had two come back, the women didn't like them.
Right, right.
So I'm going to accept... Two out of 90.
Yeah. Two out of 90.
No problem.
Yeah, no problem.
I think,
like that.
Yeah, if two women out of 90 didn't like it. Now, I would say 70-80% of the guys do not like that woman's rod.
They just have a stereotypical thing of the pink, I think. A lot of it is with them.
No, but it wasn't designed for a guy. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't work exactly right.
Unless you're using this one. The short one.
Well, this one is good for almost adults, kids, whatever.
It gives you that tight quarter ability to like backhand cast and flip up under bushes that are very tight to you. A lot of,
but the rods
are
designed for women. Are designed for women. It's for their wrist, their forearms, not a guy's.
Right.
And it's a little more uncomfortable for a guy. But that's fine. It's a pink rod. It's supposed to be that way.
It's supposed to be uncomfortable.
It's supposed to be uncomfortable for the guy. Now, Tom Fisher, he doesn't really care for it. His wife loves it.
Yeah, his wife loves it.
So, you know, I did my job, developed a rod that was actually better for women than men.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. I think the market's missing. Like with these, not one major manufacturer would build a rod for kids.
Right. Yeah, we had that problem at a couple shows we went to. You couldn't find anything of all the rod makers.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we ended up building them ourselves. A rod actually, ergonomically, is that right?
Yeah.
Made for
ergonomically
women. And then we have a series that's actually developed for kids when they leave the Snoopy pole.
Right.
Once they're off that Snoopy pole, there isn't a good rod for them until they're 12, 14 years old.
Right.
So this is a rod that's for that interim stage to get them into there, and it's a good pole.
And it's not that expensive, and
we do have the guy ones coming.
Yeah. Well, the men's rod, I just give the final okay on that, the camo stuff, the gray one with the black handle, the white blue camo with the, it's got a nice cork handle on it. It's really pretty. I'll show you the pictures. And had to do the last set by pictures because I didn't want to wait another 3 months shipping back and forth. So I just said, I'm on the rods.
Okay, we'll do it. Yeah,
we're going to do it. I'm taking a big risk on that one because I've never done that before. Every other rod we've ever done,
you've looked at it,
prototypes back and forth. And this is the first series. They've made so many good rods so far that I'm just trusting.
You're
that,
comfortable enough.
Oh, I'm scared to death. It's thousands of dollars. I'm telling you, you couldn't drive a stick pin up there with a sledgehammer right now.
Right.
You know, but
anticipation.
Yes, but I'm hoping it speed up the process a little bit. Hopefully, we'll get a rod soon.
Cool. Very good.
But anyway, back to the fishing. Carl, you've been out fishing, well, actually quite a bit. You've been booked steady for a while.
Every day, yeah.
So, how's the fishing been out there?
Great. Got a little problem going on right now. I have seemed to think fish are not colorblind.
Fish are not colorblind. That is a fact.
Yeah, I think they
You know the most visible color to fish is blue. Fish see blue more than any other color.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's the number one color that the fish can see blue. That's the first thing they see. That's the most visible color to them.
Hmm.
But no one knows exactly how they see colors. They might perceive red as purple or purple as green or whatever. They don't
know. But they
see it. But they see all these different colors.
You got to figure they got to see it because if there's a poisonous animal in nature, it's usually very vibrantly colored. So
yeah,
why have something vibrantly colored if they can't see color?
No, they know fish see colors. They just don't know exactly how they perceive the colors, but they know they see colors. It's a fact.
Because lately they do not want
You going to give away your colors?
They do not want black.
What color do they want?
They want chartreuse or pink.
Ooh.
Those are the only two colors of the fish that I'm fishing on right now are eating.
Nice.
So you don't really have a problem. You just had to switch colors.
Well, I mean, one day I was throwing red all day long. I couldn't catch a fish. The guy that was sitting next to me, he was throwing a chartreuse when he was pulling fish out left and right. I cut the one I had off and got rid of it, put a chartreuse one on, and I started catching fish.
It'll change again. You know, when we fish upriver, a lot of times for bass, you throw a blue and black spinner bait, bang them the one day, go back, try that again. No. Switch to white and chartreuse, bang them again. You know.
It's been weird.
Yeah.
I mean, red's usually one of my go-to colors because it kind of mimics blood, but man, they just don't want nothing to do with it.
Well, they might want it, you know, well done now rather than raw. You know, they're looking at that chartreuse like, this one's properly cooked. I mean, if they're like me, my family was troglodytes. They invented fire. You know, I can trace my lineage all the way back, and I don't break history. My family invented fire, the troglodytes, and now all of a sudden, I don't want to eat raw stuff. Yeah. Maybe the fish get like that too. Okay, had enough of this. This looks like it's cooked better.
Yeah. That's very possible.
No, it's not.
I mean, you got to make him feel better.
The other day, I was asking the guy on the boat, "Man, did he rub suntan lotion on my lure? Did he dip it in the gas tank?" I was asking him everything, and he was just dying laughing. And it was just simple, just switching the color. It made a difference.
Yeah.
We preach that at the meetings and all the time. The difference between a charter boat captain and the recreational weekend angler is the ability to, or the willingness to just change. If just because it worked before doesn't mean it'll work now.
Or all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to adapt to the situations. If you're throwing a bait and you're not catching fish and somebody else is throwing the same bait, well, you might be hooking in a tail, they might be hooking in a head.
Right.
It can make that much difference. Just where you put the hook in.
We had a shrimp on the back of it the same exact way on both colors, and they just didn't want the one with the red one.
Yep.
You know, I don't know, but my opinion would be that as the water changes clarity, and like if you have a tint in the water versus clear water, what happens is I think it affects what's visible to the fish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree.
Because if you have a bright chartreuse, come on, baby, come back. There we go. All right, thank you. Damn thing scares me.
Right?
I'm going to spend the rest of the day redoing this and trying to get all this stuff saved so it doesn't do that.
Right.
But I think as the water clarity changes, it affects what's visible to them. You know, what colors they're going to perceive, what colors they're going to see, and...
Well, it probably changes the color of the bait also as the water clarity changes. Because, you know, when you get shrimp from the bay, they're redder color. When they get them from the Gulf, they're clearer. The redfish in the harbor's got that copper color. In the Gulf, he's chrome with the blue iridescent tips. So it must change the color of the bait, and as a result, they key to a change, and you got to change with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's actually amazing. We got to talk Jeff into getting his captain's license. You know, I've been asking for years. I mean, I've got a boat you can run.
I love to fish, though, and I just hate to do something that I would love to do for the job. Not that I don't love working in the bait store.
And I can honestly say that is the number one reason I tell people not to be a captain.
Right, right.
Because I don't know anybody who loves fishing more than you. Right. And to turn it into a job is probably not the best thing.
It's just that, and I really, Carl, to go out and catch bait every morning and be ready at the boat ramp before daybreak. People don't really realize a lot of what's involved with it. They get on the boat, they go fishing, they catch fish. It's a great time. They don't have to put in any effort, so to speak.
Oh, the cleanup, the maintenance.
Exactly.
Worrying about the boat starting, worrying about fish eating.
Worrying about the fish eating and being on the fish.
And figuring out what bait they're going to eat that day.
There's a lot of things you got to worry about.
You got to go out, you got to come in here, you get shrimp, then you go out, you take a thing of shrimp, you go out, throw the cast net, trying to find other bait, and now you got one rod with this, one rod with that, and all these different things. And it's a nightmare, and people don't realize.
It can be overwhelming.
If I had a 9 o'clock pickup for my customer, I would be on the water before daylight, anchored up, waiting for the sun to come up so I could throw the net, and I'd already gotten shrimp the night before, so I had shrimp in the boat, I was there throwing the net, I mean...
Got the insurance policy with you, and you're trying to get what's going to be hot.
There's a ton of work that goes on before the customer ever steps on the boat, and all they see is that, you know, 4 hours, the 5 result. Hours where you're, you know, there and you're talking and baiting hooks and stuff.
Exactly.
They don't see that, okay, the trip ended at the end of the night, now you're up till midnight replacing the pumps and this and that, next thing, then you're back on the water at 5.
Yep. And you got to worry about people pulling up in your spots or already being in your spot.
Yeah. All I know, because when I go fishing on my recreational days, I usually leave very early before daybreak, get to my spot, deal with the mosquitoes and no-see-ums or whatever have you until daybreak, catch that first catfish. Generally, we're starting to get active. And then the redfish would start biting. Oh, yeah. And then about 9 o'clock, I would start hearing boats coming my way.
Yep.
And be like, oh, well, we got a redfish. Maybe we'll move so we don't key him off to this particular area. And, you know, maybe we'll go snook fishing or trout fishing or something a little different than what we were doing originally. Oh, but,
You know, it's a tough way to go. So, now, you do instructional trips. You go on people's boats and teach them.
Teach them how to get around the harbor, how to navigate, what to look for to find a spot. You know, that's one of the things everybody comes in. Where's a good spot? You know, anybody could find a good spot if they just look for it. And with the website and everything else available today, It should be very easy to find a spot.
Jeff's favorite thing is Google Earth.
Well, it is. And, you know, I mean, I fished in the area since I was 16 and found spots by sticking that 12-foot push pole down. Oh, that's deep. That's how I found deeper spots back then. I didn't have a depth finder on the boat, and we didn't have Google Earth or anything like that. We had charts, but a chart is like one man's, you know, this is what my idea of the area looks like, as opposed to an actual satellite picture of the area.
Well, that's why we sell so many of those satellite charts.
Oh, yeah. And the people on the web.
Because you've got a satellite picture on one side, and then you've got a chart on the other.
Yeah.
And the thing I think is most ridiculous is some of those charts where they got the fish stamped on them.
Right, right, right.
I cannot even look at one of those.
Yeah. There'll be a fish right here.
The only one that I even will look at or I even will talk to anybody about is waterproof charts.
Right, right, right.
I mean, if you come in and you've got one of these stupid charts with all these fish stamped on it, I tell them, buy me a bottle of tequila and get me a chart. I'll make that up.
Exactly.
You know? I take a couple of stamps and I just stamp around the outside. Yeah, here we go. Okay, that looks real good over here.
Close your eyes and
those are the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I mean, get the satellite photo and look at the stuff. Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the website, you know, there's a lot of Google pictures and maps of how to get different places.
With our website, it should be just to help you. It gets you to the area, and then you can go on Google Earth or Bing or whatever you want to do, and really search that area over with the satellite, make some notes, mental notes, actual notes.
Yeah.
And then when you go into that site, you know, I've showed you where it is.
Yeah.
Now you can actually get on a better system, because what I did was very basic. Just, I wanted to show you where it is, give you an idea what to do, but it's up to you to take it that next step.
That's right.
And
the next step for me would be, if I'm going from point A to point B, I'm going to print out a picture of point A to point B. And then I'm going to also print out a picture of point B, zoomed in a little closer, so I can see more detail of where I'm actually going to go. And that way, when I'm driving there in the boat, I'm like, oh, okay, there's that island, there's that. You can see it.
You know where it is.
Yeah.
Or nowadays, you know, you got it up on your phone and you're looking at it.
Which will die on you, by the way.
Yes, it will.
And never rely on a GPS.
No.
Never rely on a phone. Never rely on any electronics to get you back.
Yeah.
When you leave somewhere, turn around and look behind
you. Oh, yeah, that's really a good point. You know, how many people leave the boat ramp and get 2 minutes out and then turn around to take a look at see where they came from? Mm-hmm. Nobody really does that.
Besides us, I don't know many.
Yeah.
I cannot leave a dock. And before you turn left or right in a boat, look behind you and see if anybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah. Just like a car
almost
anymore.
That makes me nuts.
Yeah.
Nobody looks behind them. Once they get in a boat, it's all about in front of them.
Yeah.
And if you turn around and look behind you, A, you'll find out if you're going to get in an accident because somebody's overtaking you.
Right.
B, everything looks different coming back.
It sure does.
And that's, to me, the most amazing thing is nobody bothers to turn around.
Daytime to nighttime.
Oh, my God.
Look for land fixed objects, like a water tower. Yeah. Or
light patterns if you're coming back at
night.
We
have the
sun.
That horrible Charlotte County Airport that used to be one of my favorite things is now a friggin' nightmare.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what idiot. In World War II, they ran some planes there. So it's got history. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They also did bombing here. We have
a
lot of our areas here that have holes and deep pockets and stuff.
Because of the bombing.
They used to use manatees to do strafing runs, you know, but nobody does that anymore. We don't need this big airport.
We have
one in Fort Myers, we have one in Sarasota. It's bigger than it needs to be now. We don't need it anymore. Yeah. But they do have that cool light, white and blue.
Yep.
You can see it anywhere in the harbor.
Yep.
So as the sun's going down, look and find the airport light. Find a couple of lights, because when I was coming back after Charlie hit, I couldn't find my way home.
Yeah, it took a lot of the tree line away, and then as a result, you saw a lot more lights.
Yeah, there was lights everywhere. It used to be you saw this one and that one, and then with no trees, no leaves.
Everything was out.
I was lost.
Yeah, I was too.
I just went to the bright lights. I went, okay, now where am I? Okay, I got close enough to see a building.
Had to relearn it all again.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. Yeah.
Sun's a good thing, because sun always rises in the east and sets in the west, so that's a good thing
for me.
Daytime.
I wish it happened that way for me. I don't know why, but my sun gets turned around. You know,
does
the sun comes up, it goes over there, it's over here. I don't know. I wish I had those luxuries of having a constant sunrise and sunset. Carl's going, you're an idiot.
You should see the sunrise at least once a day.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm not sure where this is going. Carl's just...
I think we got Carl speechless, actually. Oh,
he's like, Frank, you're a weirdo. Alright, anyway, alright, I'm going to ask each one of you this question, and whoever wants to go first can go first. If you were going to go out today or tomorrow, and just, you know, you don't fish much, just want to go out and have some fun, where would you send somebody to go out and have some fun, and what would you use, a lure or bait, and if so, what bait or what lure? Who wants to go first?
I think if I was doing it today, I'd go take the ride up river. I think it's a really good ride. They call it fishing, not catching. You're going to catch a couple fish. Throw a lure out the back, a bomber, any type of black, golden, orange lure you got to work
about
in the river.
About a 15 size? 15 or do you go
size
all the way
is fine.
Up to a 16?
I will use a 16. I mean, I've seen 16-inch fish eat that big lure and take it right up to the head. And another thing I would say, pinch the barbs down. You'll get the fish.
Yeah, flatten the barbs.
Yeah, on a lure, now, you know.
I'm going to tell you, where you're talking about right now, I know there's at least a decent amount of trout, a lot of ladyfish, tarpon, redfish, and snook.
You
up
should
there.
Be able to catch a fish and see an alligator and maybe even a hog. You know? I mean,
there's hogs. There's immense amount of wildlife, and the changing environment. It goes up. It's spectacular.
Everything is bouncing back now. It's, you know, things are. There's very little signs of any traumatic events that we've had in the past.
Right.
Without going into a name. Yep.
So, Carl, what's your best bet? Where would you send somebody?
I'd probably go down to Turtle Bay. A lot of trout down there right now in the grass flats or right on the outside of the bar. There's also redfish and snook running in around the bushes.
All right, would you use lures, bait?
I'd be throwing shrimp on a bobber. Shrimp on one, a bobber underneath the Rockport Rattler. I mean, that's how I've been doing it out there.
So you're putting the popping corks on and tying a Rockport Rattler jig head below it and putting a shrimp on it. So every time the bobber moves, the jig head rattles.
Yep.
Nice. You know, they're actually, I just got an email, they're trying to come to the tent sale.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
And Rockport Rattler's a big thing. So if they come, it's going to cost me a couple of $1,000. I got to buy a lot more stuff. You've made it the hottest jig head in Florida.
I probably keep them in business just myself.
Yeah.
Well, we can't keep them in the store.
No,
it's amazing. We have actually bought them out of a couple of sizes that are empty up there. It's because they can't make them fast enough.
Yeah, that's always a good sign.
That's a great sign. Yeah. And I know we've talked about it. Some of the nicest people I've met in the fishing business are the people from Rockport.
Oh,
Rattler.
That's good.
I mean, really, really nice. I mean, I talked to them on the phone. And you know me, I like doing the radio shows. I like doing talks and all that. But to sit on the phone with somebody, I don't even answer my phone most of the time.
Yeah, right.
I bet you I talk to them for half hour, 40 minutes.
Wow. Good.
I mean, that's very, very unusual for you to be on the phone that long. So, anyway, I guess we're all going to, you want to say, let's see. Oh, my gosh. I wish I knew how to
Where are you at?
I have no idea. I'm fishing. I'm going to use this exit music here. Little Louis Armstrong, Bing Crosby. Mr. Satch and Mr. Crosby. As well as Mr. Jeff, Mr. Carl, and Mr. Frank.
Instead of just a wishing.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. Fishing Frank, Captain Carl, and our one and only Jeff.
Yeah. Nice day out there.
You guys go fishing. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.